From the Roots Up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, and later in the show, we're going to be talking to Tony Leah of Unifor about his book, but also about developments, matter of tariffs and the trade agreements and how it affects Canadian auto workers, but also all of us. But of course, today we are I hope our listeners will understand, we are taking advantage of the fact that we have Atif Kabursi, Professor Emeritus, McMaster University Economics, who is an authority on matters in the Middle East. And he was on the show last week. And since then, there's been some dramatic developments. He's kind enough to come back and talk to us further about this. Are you there, Atif?
Yeah, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's see. It was just flashed on my mind to say, well, the U.S. and others removed Muammar Gaddafi. Years back, they removed Saddam Hussein. And they've been trying desperately diligence to remove President Assad of Syria. And they had a serious run at it in 2011. There seems to be what is going on appears to be like 2011, but actually it's quite different, isn't it?
It is quite different, but it's long on coming, and they've been planning on it, as you said. And today they succeeded. The issue is, what did they succeed in doing? What is quite evident right now is that Syria is divided, is four areas, four camps. Very likely that there will be inclusive solution. It's going to be a situation where the Kurds would be at loggerheads with the Free Syrian Army supported by the Turks. The area around Latakia on the Mediterranean would remain in the hold of the Assad remnant regime and the Russians, who would defend their bases there. They have a very large naval base and a air base. The south would be in the hands of groups that call themselves Druze and, to some extent supported in a very strong way by the Americans. There is an American base in that area near Daraa, Suwaida. And in the north-northwest, you have the Tahrir al-Sham, which used to be allied and probably still is, an Islamist group under the command and the influence and the direction of the Turks. We have a very tenuous and seriously explosive situation. Israel already has taken advantage of the situation and has advanced and taken that area and under the Golan Heights, which is no man's land. So we are not going to see in any shape or form a situation which will augur for peace, stability, and the best interests of the Syrian people and the people of the region.
It strikes me that their grasp may be their reach may be greater than their grasp. You've outlined it already. They call this a coalition of forces. So how long does the coalition remain a happy coalition, and how quickly do they discover problems with each other? Let me put the rather dramatic thing at first. Some things that we thought were going to happen or would likely happen so far have not taken place. Well, one is it was a relatively smooth handover.
Which
indicates to me that there were people, there were powers that were heavily advising how this is to go in order to get cooperation from the other powers, right?
Right, you're absolutely right. In the nature of coalitions, any coalition is tenuous. It may have some reason at the time to be together, but these coalitions do not represent a unified whole. Each group has its own agendas, its own interests, its own designs, its own plans. And that's exactly the situation here. These groups are literally together because they wanted to change the regime of the Assad. But what else do they have in common? Very little, indeed, if any. And this is really why it makes many of us a bit concerned about what will be the future of Syria. Look, I mean, yesterday, if things are not really clear, President Biden came in to say, look, we made sure we weakened the Russians in Ukraine. We occupied them with Ukraine. We weakened Iran. We weakened Hezbollah through Israel. We handed this fantastic mess to the Syrians.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't use the word mess, but that's what exactly it is. Nobody would begrudge the Syrians being in a democratic and a free situation and have the sanctions lifted. But this is not the formula for it. This is a formula for division, separation, different groups trying to muscle in and take parts of Syria. The Turks has taken a part of Syria since the early 20th century. They took Alexandria, the area around the northwest of Syria, Iskenderun.
If I could ask you that, my memory is, yes, the Turks were given a port there, which was really not part of the original agreement, right? They took that.
Yeah, they did, of course. And they, you know, and who gives the French the right to give to the Turks part of Syria? The French were the mandated one by the League of Nations, and they surrendered that very important part of Syria, the Antioch, to Turkey. The story is now how much Turkey, people probably have not seen this. There is a viral video going around in which the leader of the Turkish National Party, which is an ally of Erdogan in Turkey, claiming that Aleppo is Turkish. It has nothing to do with Syria. Okay, I mean, honestly, there is no way one can be happy about what's happening here because it's a future of strife and incredible divisions and vying for power and vying for influence and vying for domination. And one cannot dismiss that Turkey, after all, is a NATO country. And that's a NATO formula. The Gulani and this Hayat Tahrir al-Sham that are basically allied totally. And the word allied is probably overstretched, that they are in the service of the Turkish regime and its designs. And this is not going to be an easy way and it can really bring about accommodation and with the Kurds feeling completely threatened and their Turkish enemy is already at their neck, so to speak. And the Israelis really coming and taking part of the Golan Heights and now advancing really into the Mount Hermon and the areas that were not, part or allowed the Israelis to come because there is an armistice agreement, and now they violated it. And yesterday they were bombarding the south part of Syria with such vicious type of, air raids, the type of which we didn't see except against Hezbollah. So the area is now at the cusp of some very fundamental change that is more likely to go into bloodshed, destruction, and the different parties exploiting the vacuum that the fall of the Assad regime has created.
Mm-hmm. It's striking that, and I find myself is thinking of the analysis that I see from one of the most eloquent individuals who has a job on this, is Lavrov, analyzing it and saying, basically, well, I'm going to summarize his views, that the U.S. is very good at destroying and absolutely worthless at building. And so they call these victories, but what is left over is pretty much a social disaster, which will come back to bite them. And I want to ask you this question. It seemed something I hadn't heard before. In the last few days, a story has come up that the agreement between this group called HTS, I guess it is.
Yeah, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. Yeah.
All these new acronyms, we have to learn them every week. HTS struck a deal with Syrian Kurds and which is, I understand, is an American-sponsored group. And Turkey does not like that. Is that so?
Of course, because you see, Turkey has always seen the Kurds as a threat to Turkey, because there are so many Turks, actually, a huge number of Turks are of Kurdish origin. And the Kurds have really been trying to create their own independent state. And this is definitely going to come at the expense of Turkey. And Erdogan has been fighting them and on very many occasions have gone after them in Iraq and have gone after them in Syria, have gone after them everywhere. And in this respect, the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is to a great extent under the influence of Turkey, I would very much believe that this agreement would be looked at favorably by Turkey, and most likely this is not a true situation, because the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham doesn't have that freedom and independence to do this. They have been supplied, organized, financed, directed, organized by the Turks. So to a great extent, there are going to be lots of rumors, but it would not be long before we would know the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a golden opportunity to bring all these parties together and include an inclusive, free, liberated, and democratic Syria. But this looks like a dream. It's not likely to happen. All the forces, all the reasons, all the way things are developing, mm-hmm. Well, and have developed, with the augur that there will be more strife, more destruction.
I see. I notice that there's a kind of people notion that, well, okay, Assad is gone, now it's a brand new world, and we're going to move on. But listening to Lavrov, and as I understand it, even the Turks, people laughed. They said, well, there's a meeting going on in Doha. Why do they bother? That's the Astana process. And if it's true that Iran and Turkey and Russia think the Astana process has got to remain in place, I don't see how the guys on the ground are going to escape fate in that respect.
Well, I see that maybe it's wishful thinking on the part, and there's no... Iran is weakened, and it's now literally concentrating on its own interests, its own issues. The Russians are completely weakened and have completely shown unwillingness to stand up with their allies. They're really all the writing on the wall that the Astana process is not there to be parties that to it are in no position to implement.
But there will be, we just outlined there that Turkey is going to have, or already does have trouble with this decision or this, we'll see what type of an alliance HTS has with the Kurdish element, but they're going to want to be saying that the Astana process, it took into account Turkey's interests. And I assume they're going to be on their case on this matter.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there is no, I'm not in a position, I don't have any real knowledge about this possibility that there is any agreement between the HTS and the Kurds. I mean, if it is there, it's probably a marriage of convenience. And maybe brokered by the Americans, who are playing both sides. They're friends of Turkey, presumably as a member of NATO, and they are the sponsors and the protectors and the promoters and the force that is aligned, so to speak, aligned with the Kurds. So it's possible, but it would not be something that one can count on to be a durable agreement, given the divisions and the different interests of Turkey and the way it feels threatened by the Kurds.
Another area, I noticed that today that they're saying, of course, people's eyes have moved to Latakia, where there is a Russian naval center, I take it. I would ask you to maybe tell us what that is. They've been there for 49 years. They have an agreement for 49 years.
And they have an agreement, yeah.
And the those who are taking power in Damascus are saying that they are not going to interfere there, or at least they have. Well, yeah, at the moment they're saying they're not. What do you make of that?
Okay, well, first thing first. This situation does indicate there is some prior agreement. Okay, the complete dissolution of the Syrian army or its unwillingness. There wasn't a single battle, you know. Aleppo fell without the Syrian army or the Russians standing up to hold this advance of the rebels. There was no fight, and the army withdrew from Hama, the second largest, and drew from Homs, which is at the crossroad between, you know, Turkey and Damascus and Lebanon. And the issue is definitely manifesting that there was some prior agreements, and the outline of these agreements, especially if the Russians were involved, that there will be no interference or no advances of the rebels into the coastal area where they have their naval base and their air base. So to some extent, things at the moment are holding, probably will hold. And this probably explains why they have such lightning and immediate control of all these areas, because the Russians must have imposed on the Syrians or have agreed on their behalf that there will be no battles. So to some extent, this is at the moment holding. Issue is, for how long?
We're speaking to Professor Atif Kubursi, and who, of course, lived in... I assume you've been to Latakia. I assume you've been, of course, many times to Damascus. The tactics that are being boasted about by Biden is probably well. I want your opinion. It appears that the sanctions, to which we could attach the word brutal, just as the treatment, it's like a siege. They've had an economic siege on Syria now for lo these many years. And it really resembles what the Israelis are doing in Gaza. These are brutal, cruel sieges. And I wonder, is that, they seem to be attributing the part of the downfall to just straight economic problems. That they have no wheat, they have no oil. The Americans are sitting on both. And, of course, the naval traffic is, shipping is controlled by Western naval powers. Is that a major contributor? Is the contributor? What do you think about what brought down Assad?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Phil. The sanctions have been extremely brutal, and they are basically premised on a false proposition. The false proposition is that if you make the people hurt, if you hurt them, they will rise against the regime and will make it more democratic. The trouble is that it's a false premise that most of these people were weakened. I didn't know how they were really given the incentive to rebel and to change the regime. The regime has been changed by Turkey, by the United States, by Israel, by others, not by the poor people. The poor people have suffered incredibly. These sanctions are basically denying people food, medicine, technology, resources, finances. So to a great extent, these sanctions worked in terms of imposing a very vicious situation that impoverished, that weakened, that diminished the capacity of the Syrian people to defend themselves and to exercise their options. Now, all the options seem to be exercised, have been imposed by those who have the resources and who have been able to get together. There is no question about it. Turkey has the resources, aided by the incredible generous finance that the Qataris have given them and have given these fighting groups, but have not been willing to give a penny to the Syrian people and the Syrian government to aid them in withstanding and minimizing or averting the consequences of these vicious, brutal sanctions.
Yeah, I think, by the way, this we can see now the Islamic Republic, they've been under these sanctions as well, and clearly it's affecting their political classes as they try to sort out how to survive and function in this world, which in which the U.S. still has that kind of power, that they can take away the medicine, they could just cause you to well, your currency is worth nothing in their world. You have to use dollars, etc. That reality remains. And again, we're speaking to Professor Atif Kaboursi. And another matter here I want to make sure I ask you about, and it is, has to do, I'm going to put sort of sidebar, the Astana process. I noticed that the Russian ambassador said, Lavrov, minister, he said that they called the Americans and asked them, they said, we see that you are talking about recognizing or supporting this individual who is broadcast to the world as the leader of HTS.
Yeah, Mohammad al-Julani.
Yeah, and they said, you know, he's on your terror list, or he was. Is he still on your terrorist list? Because we want to know. Because actually, according to all of us, terrorists can't be part of political solutions. We've all agreed. And so, and the Americans are meanwhile doing interviews with him where he appears to be kind of a Hollywood liberal.
Oh, yeah.
The same man.
CNN. He was on CNN the other day.
You must have seen that. You know, you say, thank God for liars, I guess. He just, on one time, he's got all of his garb on and he's cutting people's heads off. And then later he says, actually, I believe in all groups and I'm open to everything. I'm just a regular fellow. But, I mean, that actually is a kind of a glaring problem that how they're going to sort this out. He is on the U.S. list. And he's on United. It's a United Nations Security Council.
Yes,
list.
And he has a $10 million on his head, dead or alive.
Yeah, so pardon me.
There is a bounty on his head, $10 million.
Oh, that's right. We could somebody could make a lot of money fast. I guess now he's out in the open.
Yeah, exactly.
But what do you? Aren't they kind of stuck in a problem? I mean, it seems like the Americans are kind of embarrassing themselves if they're going to try to embrace him, and which would drive them back towards the argument of Iran, Turkey, and Russia at Astana was they said, yes, Assad can go provided you do it in an appropriate way, and the opposition, which is not terrorist, participate in an electoral process. But if you're going to try to jump the gun and bring in your hired guns, pardon the pun, but anyhow, if you do that, this is a non-starter.
Well, the real problem here and the issue here is that American foreign policy never had values or had any decency about it. I mean, to a great extent, you know that Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, and then one time a candidate for President of the United States, bragged that she made sure to create these Islamicist things and use them. So to a great extent, here is a situation where I saw Baghdadi, who is the predecessor of the Gilani and the guy who formed and led and overseen the ISIS, was in cahoots with late Senator McCain. And he's in a meeting and chummy with all the American politicians. So to a great extent, America has never seen and shown any shame or any morality in the way they deal. It's just pure real politics and using, abusing countries and people to maintain the dictates of dominance and the empire. So I'm not surprised about this. And to a great extent, you know, they go on bombing campaigns here and there. And most often, when they were going to bomb ISIS, they made sure they bombed Hezbollah and all the Syrian forces aligned with the Assad on the way. There is no way in my mind that quite a bit of the bombing that the Israelis and the Americans have carried in Syria were basically and fundamentally preparing the grounds for this easy overtake the rebels have been able to engineered to see the downfall of the Syrian regime. They couldn't have happened, couldn't have succeeded if the Israelis and the Americans did not prepare the grounds for them and eliminated through bombing and other means the areas and forces that could have withstood and held back their advances.
Yes, it... And by the way, moving to that, a question of how it was handled, I find it striking that the Russians have been, I would put it this way, loyal in that they did provide, they said, okay, President Assad can come to Russia. Saddam Hussein was not so fortunate. And Muammar Gaddafi was not so fortunate. So something is changing if they can say he was prepared to go through with the process. He was someone with whom we had agreement, so he can come here.
Yeah. I tell you, there is no way we can dismiss the connection between Syria and Ukraine. Many of us and many American analysts have come to the conclusion that what's happening in Syria and the fall of the Assad and the weakening of the Russian presence in Syria has a lot to do with the Russian success in Ukraine and the possible victory or the possible agreement in Ukraine that would see the surrender of land and positions by the Ukrainian government prompted, forced by President Trump when he assumes his leadership. So to a great extent, this is Biden revenge, so to speak, against the Russians in Syria in return for what might have might come in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, often. I mean, if you there's a parallel in history with all these things that when a leader goes abroad and has a place where he is secure from pursuit, assassination, etc. He remains then a political asset. Some would say, well, oh, he's a problem. Is it, given the situation, which you've described, of a potential balkanization, differences amongst group, what Assad stands for and historically, you know, led, is possible to reappear, right?
Yeah, no, okay, there is one thing that one need to, ascertain here. And this was not really used in and could have been used in Iraq. Syria, as we said, is now divided into three or four camps. There is one camp which is known as the Alawite Mountain. The area of Latakia and the area all around it is still dominated by forces and people loyal to Assad. And this is the area that is most sensitive and important to the Russians. So to a great extent, the Russians see in Assad's alliance and maintenance of his relationship could serve their interest because he is still a dominant force in Latakia, Tartus, and these areas, the mountain area where the Alawites are, despite the fact they are a minority in Syria, but a majority in that region.
Mm-hmm. well, could I ask, minutes to go, I want to ask you... The Iraq has exactly many of these issues, and I haven't really heard what the Kurdish leadership of Iraq is saying. When I say Kurdish leadership, there's a group there entirely sponsored by the Americans and very close to the Israelis, but I haven't heard anybody refer to them.
Well, they're definitely a force, and they are going to be a real issue here because, as you know, the Turks have really come into Syria and have really been, to a great extent, targeting Assad because they have feared that he has, to a great extent, aligned himself, at least even on a superficial level, but marriage of convenience or whatever it is, that he was not willing to sacrifice the Kurds in Syria, and despite all the pressures and the attempts of the Turks to persuade him to put an end and to allow them a free hand in Syria. So to a great extent, what we really have here is a situation where Turkey and the Kurds remain at loggerhead, and if there is going to be no accommodation, that is a flashpoint and is likely to explode in the face of Turkey and everyone else very soon.
I'm really glad you underlined it in just those words. Professor Atif Kapursi, we're so grateful to talk to you, and particularly in this fluid situation, we look forward to following this matter with you, if you will. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. I wish it I wish it would be different. I wish it would be a peaceful, inclusive, and democratic transition. But the forces on the ground, the interests of all the different parties who are at loggerheads with one another, the interests of these forces, whether it's Israel, the United States, or Turkey, and other people, are basically and fundamentally intercepting and overtaking the possible forces that could bring a peace and agreement and reconciliation among the Syrian people. We're in for a very troubling, uncertain future, and one that could easily explode in our face.
Yes, and which means we should all keep our eyes open and follow closely, and that requires Professor Atif Kaborsi. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure, Phil, always.
Good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'll tell you a proverb. The big fish eat the little fish. The little fish eat shrimp. And the shrimp eat mud. We're going to play a little bit of Bob Dylan, I believe, and then we will be back with Tony Leo.